The content of this program is intended for a blind and visually impaired audience. From the North Carolina Reading Service, I am Shadate Hargett Hill, and this is Connect to Success. For the next half hour, I will be bringing you stories from blind.com and wonderlist.com, hopefully giving you information, education, and stories of information, of inspiration, in hopes that you will connect to your own success. Last month, we were going into a story about what it feels like to date someone that was blind, and I was almost at the end of the story, and in case you missed it, I'm going to read it again and start from the beginning. All right? Sounds good. Great. What is it like to date a blind person? The story goes, I apologize, but this response will be long. It actually reads more like a short story, so feel free to skip it. I wanted to clue you in on as much as I could about my experiences. My first husband, who crossed over in 2005, was totally blind since birth. We met at a church that we were attending, and I was a keyboard player. He was also a musician, asked someone to introduce me to him. I spent about 3 hours with him at a Memorial Day picnic in 1986. We had a lot in common as far as music was concerned, since we were both composers and enjoyed the same type of music. He took my phone number and said that he would call me on the following Friday at 10 p.m. I had a job where I worked until 9. So all throughout that week, I was obsessing about this interesting man, Michael, who happened to be 3 years younger than me. I was 24 at the time. When Friday night came around, he called me at 10:01 p.m. Now, he only lived about 10 miles from me, but this was back in the day before there were cell phones, and we happened to live in a different time zone from each other. So he kept the call short, but asked me to come to his house the next day to play some music together. When I went there, it was so much fun. Jamming with someone who understood music like I did, we both were into progressive rock, jazz, and jazz fusion. I also had brought some albums of mine, like Yes and Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and it opened up a new world for him musically. We started hanging out a lot and became good friends. On the 4th of July, we went to a park and sat up on a hill. We didn't actually go see the fireworks, but it was thundering and lightning outside, and he enjoyed just listening to the sounds. I described lightning to him as best as I could, and we called it God's Light Show. It was that night that I shyly told him that I liked him more than just a friend, and he said that the feelings were mutual. We began dating and became engaged in March of the next year. We had a very strong relationship and ended up having a sort of marriage ceremony in November of 1988. At that time, if we legally got married, his Social Security benefits would be taken away because of my income. He did become gainfully employed as a telemarketer in 1991, and we legally got married then. Dealing with the daily living skills of someone who has never seen anything. Michael had a mobility instructor who would meet with him weekly and take him through the neighborhood, helping him to navigate his way around town with the use of a cane. He never had a dog. He didn't want the hassle of cleaning up after it. But when he was with me, I always had him take my arm and I would guide him around. I probably was detrimental to him in this regard because it was easier to just lead him by the arm rather than spend the extra time watching him fumble his way with the cane. Me being blind for a weekend? Well, 1 year on my birthday, Michael accidentally poked his finger in my eye. I ended up with a corneal abrasion. The doctor said that I needed to rest both eyes for a couple of days in order to let the injured eye heal better. So here I am, wearing a scarf around my eyes and asking Michael for help. This actually was pretty comical. He led me around the house all weekend, and I got a taste of what he lived through on a daily basis, though sometimes I cheated and peered through the opening at the bottom of the scarf. 9/11. On September 11, 2001, about 8 hours after the Twin Towers collapsed, I was at work. He called me from a hospital and said that he was in a burn unit in a hospital about 30 miles away from home. Apparently, he had lit a cigarette and his beard caught fire, and the fire spread to parts of his face and chest. Instinctively, he knew to roll on the carpet to put the fire out. He was an Eagle Scout. Well, he needed flight for life to come and get him. He needed flight for life to come and get him, but they had to have authorization from President Bush and have military planes accompany the medical helicopter to the hospital. He was in so much pain, and I spent every free moment with him. Luckily, he healed pretty quickly, but needed a skin graft, which they took from his leg. At that time, 9/11 was the farthest thing from my mind. Unfortunately, this story doesn't have a happy ending. Michael began experiencing severe pain in his muscles and various parts of his body beginning in 2003. We went to the ER several times and to family practitioners who kept giving him pain medications, but didn't know what the cause of this was. He sometimes will fall down for no apparent reason, which wasn't due to obstacles that were in his way that he stumbled upon because of his blindness. He was referred to a neurologist who ran a battery of tests and was diagnosed with reflex sympathetic dystrophy. It is a syndrome stemming from the autonomic nervous system. Anyway, we had to have a home health care practitioner come every day because he's going downhill rapidly and I couldn't take care of him properly. Final stages of Michael's life in a nursing home. He was put in a nursing home for this horrible progressive illness. I watched him succumb to a wheelchair, but for a while he could still play his keyboard. His entire body became red, stiff, swollen. One day when I visited him, I was all excited because I had figured out how to play a very difficult Genesis song on the keyboard. So I played it for him. Usually, he would compliment me on things like this, but not this time. He had completely lost the usage of his right hand. June 30 of 2005. I spoke to Michael that night on the telephone. It was a Thursday, and I was planning on coming to see him the next day. The next morning, matter of fact, at 10 a.m. I was working as a custodian at the time, and a funny thing happened that day at the school that I was working at that I told him about. There was a baby swallow in one of the nests on the outside of the building. Somehow, this poor thing got one of his feet tangled up in the nest and couldn't fly away. So I grabbed a ladder, a pair of scissors, and a wash rag and climbed up the ladder. I gently spoke to him, put the rag over his body, and clipped what was entangling his foot to free him. He then flew away. When I told Michael the story, he said, "That bird is probably grateful now that he is free." I was going to take him to Wendy's, and he was looking forward to it, but he said something in a strange tone of voice that still haunts me to this day. He said, "I'm declining." It wasn't really a complaining tone of voice. When I remember these words in hindsight, it was just sort of a resignation. I really didn't think much of that at the time because I just focused on our upcoming visit. I told him, as always, that I loved him. The Jimi Hendrix Experience. Michael and I had always been fond of the song Angel by Jimi Hendrix. I know this post is very long, but maybe you can listen to the lyrics sometime. Hendrix wrote it in July or August of 1970, shortly before his death in September of that year. He wrote it about his mom's death, but he puts the song as his own experience. It's basically about two visits on two consecutive days that he receives from an angel. On the first visit, the angel says that she will come back for him the following day. She ends up coming back, and the listener is left assuming that the angel takes Hendrix with her forever. I went to the grocery store in plenty of time to be at the nursing home by 10 the next day, and about 9:30, I turned on the car radio, and that song was playing. My arrival at the nursing home? I don't know, but when I got there, there was an ambulance outside, and I just had a weird feeling. I said to myself, O-F. F. I went inside the nursing home, and when I got to Michael's room, I was confused because I thought I was lost. So I asked the nurse if he had been moved to a different room, and she told me to sit down. She took my hand and said, Michael passed away this morning at about 9. I felt this rush of blood in my forehead, started crying, and just said, no, no. She said she called me and left a message. I still had a landline. The cause of death was a severe bowel obstruction from complications of the reflex sympathetic dystrophy. Aftermath. Living with Michael taught me a lot about patience and about loving someone for who they are on the inside. I actually composed a musical mass in his honor. Hopefully from that story, you will learn that love doesn't see. It's something that you feel. And if you feel it strongly enough within your heart, you will find love. And that love will last forever, even when that person doesn't. The next post comes from, what things do blind people notice that most sighted people don't? Sounds. The post person says, my blind husband is concerned with the lack of animal sounds right now, with Hurricane Doreen approaching. He can tell where we are in the car based on road sounds, turns made, and time traveled. He knows if traffic is coming or going and how far away it is when walking. He knows how far away another person is based on the sound of their voice. He lightly claps his hands using echolocation to orient himself in our yard, which is 0.5 acre yard. The next post is, what things do blind people notice that most sighted people don't? And again, they say, sound. What does a completely blind person see? This is easy to answer. It's hard to conceptualize, but bear with me for a moment. You are sitting here looking at your screen comfy. Good. Are your feet up? If not, don't worry. Do you have shoes on? Socks? Slippers? Cool. Barefoot? Even better. Think of your right foot. Imagine your consciousness entering that foot. What does your footwear look like from the inside as seen by your foot, not your eyes? Can you detect light? Anything? Exactly. Nothing at all. It's very hard to imagine not seeing when you have functional eyes to see with. This is why most people suppose that blind persons see blackness. We don't. My blind left eye sees nothing at all, not even blackness. It has the same visual acuity as my foot, my elbows, my knees. So the answer is that a completely blind person does not see nothing. Instead, they don't see at all. Oh, and for those synesthetics out there, sorry, I got you all confused. I'd hug you, but you might hear the taste. They said, his name is D. Much love. Next post and answer, what was your most amazing experience with a blind person? This is like saying, what was your most amazing experience with a redheaded person? Blind and otherwise disabled individuals aren't your inspiration machines. We're everyday people just living our lives. Maybe stop worrying about how our amazingness can enrich your life and start thinking about the way inaccessible society bars us from, as you say, amazing experiences. All right, go ahead now. The next one says, why do you believe people wear glasses when they can't see? It says, why do blind people wear glasses when they can't see? Okay, a day before I got this question, I was accosted by a conductor on a train for wearing glasses while legally blind. I was yelled at and shamed in front of my young children and 30 strangers. This is one of the many reasons I am upset about the issue in general. I'm not upset at the Quora asker. I did have to try hard to be gentle with this question because it touches on a sore issue. But the Quora.com is a place to ask such questions, and not knowing this isn't a bad thing. Demanding answers about someone else's health in public is the problem. The reader says, I'm going to try very hard to be polite here. It isn't easy because this question makes my blood boil. I am often harassed by people who take exemption to the combination of my white cane, my glasses, and the printed book that I am reading on the train. But since you asked, I will try to clear this up for once and for all. Read this next sentence very carefully, and I am reading it for you very carefully. Most blind people can see some. Most blind people can see some. There are people who are totally blind. Some of them wear glasses. Some reasons might be, one, to cover disfigured eyes and thus gain a bit in social acceptance. Two, to protect their face from branches and other obstacles. Three, to let other people know they can't see, again, in order to avoid social problems and as traffic safety measures. However, 90% of legally blind people can see something, even if it's just light. Those who can see only light are often light sensitive, and bright light can cause pain. If they can't see much beyond light, they will rarely have a warning when bright light is coming. So dark glasses are a real necessity. And then there are the rest of us, i.e. most people who are legally blind, who can actually see some but not much. We often wear glasses in order to improve our vision. There are legally blind people with extremely narrow field of vision, sometimes called tunnel vision, who can otherwise see pretty well, but only in a small area. A person with that kind of vision problem may or may not need glasses. Then again, many legally blind people are simply extremely nearsighted. This is my specific vision impairment. I am so nearsighted that my eyes focus about an inch from the lens. Very heavy glasses push this point out to about 2 inches, which may not sound like a big improvement, but it significantly improves what I can see at 10 feet. Everything at 10 feet is still really blurry either way, but without glasses, it's just a massive blur with no distinction. With glasses, there are lumpy, fuzzy, large objects. So glasses make a big difference. Contact lenses are actually more effective in my case. Explaining it would take a very long scientific explanation of optics and the distinctions between lenses. By the extraordinary thick contact lenses I wear tend to damage one's cornea, so I can't wear them very often, thus the glasses. And just to complete the explanation, although I know you aren't the irate train conductor from yesterday who didn't believe that I'm legally blind because I was reading The Little House in the Book Woods in print to my daughter on the train with my white cane propped on my knee, I can see reasonably well at 2 inches. That is why I was reading the book so close. No, please do not mash the book into my face and claim that you are helping me get to it closer, as so many people have, or I will stop being polite. I cannot, however, see the gray on gray steps on the train. And if I don't use a white cane or a good memory and some echolocation, I might trip. I also use the white cane to tell you why my eyes are a bit squinty and why they move erratically. The fact that I have a white cane will tend to make you realize that I probably can't see well. Otherwise, most people immediately assume I have a mental or developmental disability. Given the choice, I prefer the nasty social things most people do to blind people over the nastier social things most people do to people with developmental disabilities. So, even though I can usually get around pretty well, even over those gray on gray steps, with echolocation and memory, I have started carrying a white cane in order to avoid endless explanations and ostracism. Ironically, the other most common reason I am harassed in public over my vision impairment is when I wear contact lenses instead of glasses. I can't count the times a complete stranger has lectured me about how I need to go to the eye doctor and get glasses when they see how close I'm holding my book. I've heard many people insist that glasses can always cure any nearsightedness. I have tried to explain the principles of optics to them and the fact that nearsightedness can only be corrected so far, and that in any case, there are these wonderful new things that came out, about 50 years ago called contact lenses, and I'm wearing a state-of-the-art example of that works far better than any glasses. The point of all this and the answer that you didn't ask for is this. Please, dear reader, don't bug people about their glasses or lack thereof, or their cane or lack thereof, or their wheelchair or their hearing aid or any such thing or lack thereof. It is their device and their responsibility. If they are your friend and you are curious, they'll probably be happy to explain, if you ask politely. The fact that someone has a disability card that says they are blind and yet they don't have a white cane and they either do or don't wear glasses does not mean that they have forged the disability card. It means they have good orientation and mobility skills, some ability with echolocation and rhino skin when it comes to the social world. Doctors are in charge of diagnosing vision problems and helping people determine what sorts of glasses or other optical aids they need. It is not your job to attempt to give such advice on the subway or in the workplace or at school or anywhere else, unless you're a medical vision specialist, in which case I hope you're laughing right now. I hope this answer has been helpful and not too impolite. Thanks for asking nicely. If you would like to read more down-to-earth stuff on vision impairments, there are several more articles. Rebel with a pen. Best wishes. I guess she told you. The next post is, what are the benefits of being blind? What an offensive question. What are the benefits to being poor or in a wheelchair? To me, this makes it seem like the asker sees blindness as a cushy special treatment card you can just pull out to get stuff. Let me tell you something, it's not. And actually, in the past 10 years, in the U.S. at least, people have gotten extremely entitled and even more rude to the disabled, including the blind. Do you want the sarcasm or a sugar-coated answer? Well, I assume the latter. The benefit is that we don't rely on our vision and have that make decisions for us. I can't count on both hands and toes how many times people have asked on Quora.com how we fall in love, literally discounting the other senses. We can do everything you think requires sight in the dark. I cannot tell you how many times Quarians ask, how can I, a blind person, get dressed, have sex, feed ourselves, get around, yoga, swimming, shaving, make coffee, smoke, although that's tricky. The benefit is that we can sometimes do things better than you sighted folks. My job has 3 workstations. They are supposed to be cleaned off after every use. I leave my station cleaner than a lot of people here. I sometimes go try to use a station, and not only do I find piles of crumbs, I find them in the keyboard. What is that about? how is a blind person able to clean up after sighted folks? I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I at least try and make sure to only leave 0.000001 parts per million of matter on the desk. Not to generalize, because this doesn't apply to all blind folks. However, blind people make great musicians, authors, chefs. We emote in a totally raw manner that lets us put a lot into our work. Maybe the question is not, what are the benefits? Maybe we should ask, what are the positives? We'll continue more with some more Q&A from Quora.com that asks these very, very important, sometimes crazy, questions that you can listen to and say, yep, that's right. That's about right. How does a blind person spend his usual day? A blind person, for starters, would be accustomed to being blind, so he would do everything a normal person would do. However, he would be devoid of light and sight, so it is more or less everything normal like we people who can see, except not focusing on the limitations where being blind doesn't help: watching TV, driving a car, playing video games, etc. I'm blind. What does it feel like to see color? What feelings do colors cause? When was the last time you looked forward to something, like a visit from a person you loved? Do you remember how you felt early on the morning of that anticipated occasion, the day you've been waiting for stretched out immediately before you? That's green, the tight, certain potential of a bud. On a hot day, walk in cool rain, the drops hitting your skin are what it feels like to see something sparkle. Each pelt holds a diminutive, delightful surprise, even as you're feeling it. Listen to any song by Alicia Keys, all loud and full and scratchy. I think her music is red, insistent, imperious, demanding. Red is hard to look away from, and it's like it's that way. It's always such a show-off. After a generous, salty dinner, hold something cold and sweet in your mouth, like watermelon or an orange. That's what yellow feels like, a burst of refreshing energy that lifts your spirits without being saccharine or tiresome. After a noisy day, sit in a room alone, not sad alone, not longing alone, peace alone. That's blue. Quiet, spacious suspension. The sky is blue. People see who see could look up and escape anytime, but we forget we can see, but we forget we can, so we almost never do. Cover yourself with a soft blanket and trace the contours of your own shape lining under it. That's what the hills of California look like. Gentle curves that slope for miles, giants sleeping under blankets of hay. After a long night of restlessness, sleep, yank over a window and feel the outside air blow in and replace the star one. That's what the Golden Gate Bridge feels like, standing clean and proud as it guards the entrance of the San Francisco Bay. Well, we've run out of time for this episode of Connect to Success. We hope you've enjoyed it. The content of this program is intended for a blind and visually impaired audience. From the North Carolina Reading Service, I am Shadate Hargett Hill. See you next time on the radio.